I went and changed my life and saved my life, and I never changed who I was. I became a better, stronger, healthier version of who I was, and more equipped now to love more. Because that's the fucking point.
Don't you know that the music should be solemn?
This is Theo Rossi.
This is Theory.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. What's up, everybody? So, coming up, this guy and I go way back to, doing a small film together many, many years back, him sleeping on my couch. And he truly is one of the most talented people on this planet. I do not say that lightly. He can do it all. And more importantly, he is so open and honest and upfront about his journey, about his mental health, about everything of who he is. And I admire it tremendously. So I'm really excited about this one. And let's go sit down with my guy, Zachary Levi. I'm ready. Hi, 20 years.
Let's start there. 20 years.
20 years.
Or has it been longer?
Well, you slept on my couch.
Oh, yeah. Quite a few times.
Before we did a film called Big Shots.
Big Shot, colon, Confessions of a Campus Bookie, starring the likes of one David Krumholtz,
and
one Carmine Giovinazzo.
Tori Kittles. Played Steve Headache Smith.
Yeah. Krumholtz is an American actor.
What happened? What's happening? No.
Hey.
No.
Wow.
Who is that, Alexa?
I want it on.
That has never, ever happened in here, ever.
I think is the fucking greatest thing ever. And you know what it shows?
That should stay in the podcast.
It should.
The other voice you heard was Zach Romulan, our resident podcast engineer. That was Zach responding to an out-of-body Alexa who just wanted to butt in on our conversation. We get it. You know David Krumholtz. Everybody knows David Krumholtz.
They're listening to us. They saw the ice storm. Jeez, I think he was in that too. Listen, that is the perfect moment because that film, and now Alexa even knows, with that film, that was like the first moment where for me, and I don't know if it was for you, where I was like, oh shit, you get paid to act like more than co-starring.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That was early for you.
Yeah. That was super early. Well, listen, when was that? That
2000?
Was 2001.
Yes. I moved out to LA in October 31st, 1999.
2001. So yeah, coming up on nearly 20 years. And I started auditioning in Hollywood in February. No. I don't know. Probably like March of 1999. So I've been doing this just from like my first legitimate Hollywood audition to now has been just over 20 years. And then early on in that, obviously, like we were just saying, in 2001, so just a few years in, I had done a couple of pilots by that point, and those paid good money.
Yeah.
But if they don't get picked up, then you just get the one paycheck and then you're done.
Hold for a year.
Yeah.
6 months.
So I did a couple pilots, sitcom pilots, but that was the only work I didn't book. And also I was repped by Endeavor at the time because I was super lucky that I randomly got scouted. I randomly got called into this to Randy Hiller casting that was right down the road from where you lived at the time in West Hollywood.
Yeah.
Who was she's still such a doll and has always been such a fan of actors and talent and has always fought. And I quite literally had no representation. I had a manager who was hip pocketing me or whatever at the time. And she was submitting, not hip pocketing. I was signed to her, but she was sending out my horrible headshots to whoever would call me in. And Randy, as it turned out, pulled me up out of one of those unknown boxes, you know, that we always dread looking at those casting offices, like, oh, look at all these schmucks who are stuck in these boxes. Yeah. Well, I was in those boxes. And Randy pulled me in for an audition, read me, and then believed in me, and then got me to Endeavor ultimately, which was incredible. But they didn't have any junior agents that were covering any kind of co-stars or guest stars or anything. So I didn't even get the opportunity to go and build my resume or my pocketbook with any of those gigs. So I unfortunately or fortunately don't know what it means to make that kind of cash,
right?
Which has only gotten worse, I know, over the years.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where it was like you were working with a bunch of people. We were doing it for a little, like at the time, it felt like a little while. It was probably a couple of weeks or a month, whatever. And we were like, oh,
Big Shot, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we went to, did we go to Vegas?
We went to Vegas. It was so weird.
So then, and then everything kind of, you know, life happens, right? All these different things occurred. We had discussed and seen each other throughout a few times. We had connected through things. What I've appreciated about you more than ever from afar, and I've always absolutely loved about you, is you've always been you.
Yeah, thanks.
which is really important to say, like both, like good, bad, indifferent, whatever you say, for someone to be their authentic self is like literally fucking almost impossible in our business because people change.
Yeah.
With the, whatever class they're taking, Peloton.
Survival instincts. Yeah, survival. It's right. Survival, yeah. Yeah.
They become other people. And you were always like, you know, you were just, you know, always super like, not in your beliefs, in your everything. And I appreciated that because I was in such a chaotic phase of my life that I was watching you and I was like, this motherfucker is younger than me and he just has such a good head on his shoulder.
Not that much younger than you. How old are you now?
I just turned 40. No, I'll be, I don't even know what year it is. I'll be 45.
Huh?
Yeah, I look amazing.
Oh, you you really do.
I do.
Brown, don't frown, bro.
No, bro. No. It's Middle Eastern.
Well, look, dude, I super appreciate that. I mean, look, I think that, I'm very grateful that no matter what I've gone through in my life, God has been so good and I've been able to survive all of that. All of the crazy, all of the amazing, you know, but also there's, as we all know, that we all go through a lot of trauma throughout our life. Mm-hmm. And trauma is very defining if you don't go and figure it out and heal it, get to the root of it and root that shit out. And I'm super grateful that no matter what I've been through in my life, I've gotten a good amount of healing to make a lot of that healthier and more right. But even when I was broken, and I didn't even know how broken I was, I still always valued authenticity more than anything else because I didn't want, I grew up with a mom who was so deceptive, even though she didn't know it, she was deceptive and manipulative and it was insane to watch. I was literally learning at the master's feet, like, oh my God, as an actor, particularly somebody who, my mom could chameleon. She could like charm people. She could like, it was incredible.
What did she do for a living? What was she?
She worked at a bunch of different places. She was a manager at restaurants sometimes, or she worked at front desk at like a, I don't know, a real estate office, but she was mainly a mom, you know, but it was just the way that she maneuvered through different people in life and whatnot. And that was all her survival instincts, as I came to find out in therapy. But at the time I thought, I love my mom, but holy crap, like she's a real piece. She's a real piece of work in the way that she could do a lot of this stuff. And I think ultimately I kept seeing a lot of non-authenticity out in my world as a child, and I wanted nothing to do with it. I wanted to make sure, even if people didn't like who I was, that I was going to be me. I was a super, super outgoing, nerdy cat. Even up to the point when you and I were meeting each other, I was definitely a bit more square than the rest of the game.
No, and I loved it. I wasn't used to it, to be honest. I just grew up such a different way, and Hollywood in general was such like a wake-up call for me to other types, because it was always like, beep your horn at the car behind you, you can get punched in the face. Like, let's fight. There was drinking. There was drugs. There was this. It was just very aggressive.
Yeah.
Overtalk. Aggressive.
Yeah.
Move forward. And it was like, as I started getting around other people, especially in the arts, it was like, oh, this is different. There's another way to play this game.
Yeah.
You know, you and I just talked about the bill of goods we're sold as people is very different. But when you realized that, did that, because you're talking about something that a lot of us talk about, which is not so much the sins of the father, but like looking back on the influences in our life, right? Like what, from a young age where we don't understand what influence is.
I think that's sins of the father. I do. Right? I don't know how much sins of the father, biblically speaking anyway, is nature or nurture. But to be honest, I think that the very wise people of old that weren't distracted with all the things we're distracted with now, but got real deep into human psyche and why we do the things that we do. I'm sure they were aware of this a long time ago. It's both. Mm-hmm. It's both nature and nurture. It is both the programming that we get from our parents and then beyond our parents, the rest of our family and our friends and our school and our community and our society and then world, like what we all influence. Even agree upon. That's all that influence and all that programming that we get. But even that programming, I'm not convinced that you can't. In fact, I think there's studies that have been done recently where they talk about, you know, it's like reprogramming our synapses. Traumatic synapses can be reprogrammed. Some, and they're even saying, you know, there's great studies that are talking about psilocybins and things like that are helping people do that. But I personally believe that a nurtured trauma quite literally reprograms our nature. And if we don't ever, like in chromosomally even speaking, like I think that you could pass that on to your kid because it'll get tweaked in your own chromosomes while you're alive.
Yeah.
And then that tweaks your own sperm or your wife's egg. And that stuff can start creating an actual physical manifestation of what a natured response to what was a nurtured trauma.
Yeah.
And, but then we can reverse it too. We can look at our now bad DNA and we can nurture it back.
Yeah, I think. You're right. I'm going to tell you, you're 100% right. I have two boys that are 2 and 4 years old, you know, and one is the yin and the yang, right? They have both sides of me.
Yeah.
I could see them both. Yeah. You know, one is like this paranoid, anxiety ridden, you know, super smart, like way smart, like weirdly smart, can look at a book. Don't let the pigeon drive the bus, you know, look at it. He doesn't know how to read, but if you show him it twice, he can read the whole book to you. He's not reading it. He's memorized what you said. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then the other one would just walk through a wall like he's a barbarian. Like, you know, he's like,
that's the Theo I know.
Yeah. He's the barbarian. He's got long hair. They both have long hair down to their shoulders. They just run through and he's not a thinker. He's a charger. Like he goes through. But the point is that I watch my wife and I in him, our anxieties, our fears, our like stress. And now we have the nature, which we didn't get to say, hey, I'm recognizing something here. Let's change this. Let's start working on this. Let's focus more on don't be scared. This is okay. As opposed to get over it. What are you doing?
Because that's what our parents knew. Because they didn't know any better. Because mental health wasn't even really being addressed at all. And if it was, it was like, oh, mental health, are they crazy? There was only, I talk about this all the time because I think it's such an important delineation. We have no problem talking about physical health. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, nobody likes to be infirm, obviously, but it's like, oh yeah, I got sick or I got the flu or I've got cancer. Or I lost my leg or whatever the hell that is. And nobody looks at anyone else and says, oh my God, I can't believe you got the cold.
Right.
Oh my God. But if you're talking about, or at least prior to the last few years, let's say.
But still,
we're working through it and trying to reduce stigma. But certainly not too long ago, if you started talking about how you were depressed or you were stressed out or you were angst out or any of these things, shocker, people start being like,
what's wrong with this person?
Exactly, because they've been instilled with this stigma like we've all been instilled with it. If you don't have your shit together, there's a problem with you. And no one's really even understood what all of society has been building, like the levels of anxiety specifically that have been building in us for all of these years.
Yeah, I think it makes people, most people, and I know I am and I'm sure you are, and I could see just the way your life is, that most people are problem solvers. We can physically fix a physical problem. Yeah. You tore your MCL, you tore your ACL, your knee hurts. Yeah. Let me talk to you. You can do this, you can do that, you can do this. When it comes to mental, I think that people go, the tools are so varied. I don't know. It depends because they're unique to you, right? Yeah. So for me, when I was a kid and I started doing drugs at like a super young age, which was so weird. I started smoking weed when I was like 12. Everything was fine. Then I started doing mushrooms when I was like 15 and I would have these weird, I was watching myself from above type feelings. Mm-hmm. And then I would get super anxious and all this. And I was like, something's not good. But I was afraid to tell my friends because I was like, they seem to be having a lot of fun. For all I know, they were going through the same thing. Yeah, but it was like, we just didn't say it. Right now, if that same thing, I had fallen and broken my arm, we can talk. Oh, I broke my arm too. It's like a normal conversation. Totally. There's always been a feeling about mental health that it shows weakness.
Yeah, there's a stigma. There has been a stigma about mental health, no doubt. But that's partly because we have just not understood it. we are afraid of what we don't understand.
Yes, so
and you know, Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung and these front runners in this field that were really laying a lot of the groundwork that we all stand upon today, they were even kind of considered a little, you know, like, what are they even talking about? And then, of course, in the us growing up in our generation, how many times did you see a psychiatrist or a therapist on screen that wasn't being depicted as being some kind of a, oh, and tell me about your tell me about your mother. It was all a joke.
Yeah,
it was
it's all like Jacob's Ladder. There was never portrayed in a good light.
No, it was always never. Like, man, if you ended up there, you're the joke in the
you're
situation.
Laying down, you have a problem.
Yeah.
And so when you're going through, you had this, you, because I remember you went from what I remember, obviously your career, you were doing the show with Andy Dick and them, you were doing Less Than Perfect, and then you were just then you were on that wave, right? You were going up. At what point did you sit back and go, I got to address this. I got to talk about this with myself.
37. I mean, I just shared with you outside, but I moved out here to Texas after going to, like, I got married and divorced very, very quickly. It was like a flash in the pan 10-month thing with a girl that I held a candle for 10 years of my life that I thought for sure was supposed to be my wife. And I thought I loved whatever understanding of love I had at that time, you know, which is so fascinating. If you don't actually know what love is because you don't love yourself, then you don't know what love is.
So true.
And I didn't. And I didn't know that. I didn't know most of this shit. I was a pretty intelligent person and empathetic person, but I didn't know the extent of the wounds that I had received as a child from my mother specifically and my stepfather and my dad not being around. All of those things conditioned little Zachy Poo to have very specific traumas that led to very specific, you know, brain and emotional activity. And that all seemed normal because it's all normal to us. We don't know unless someone's pointing out to you that you don't see reality entirely correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very difficult thing to grasp because you're like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, you know, your ego won't allow for that because your ego is built to survive. So of course you're not going
to
hear
anything. To be different, exactly. To assimilate, to try to fit in. It's not to say, no, I don't feel that way. You go, I feel that way too. Like, because that's what we're built to do.
Yeah.
So is that the moment where you go, oh, something...
Well, for me, in some ways, I wish it was a more gentle experience. I wish that I would have been more tuned into my own unrest or unhappiness or unsettledness or whatever. I wish I would have been able to tune into that and see that it was something that was still rooted in some healing that I needed to do. But instead, like most people, I saw it as all external problems. I saw it as I am suffering with what I'm suffering from because this person's not doing what I'm needing them to do, or that person's not doing what I need them to do, or this person is that or that, whatever, right? And by the way, they're not mutually exclusive. All of those things could be true.
Yes.
But a healthy heart and a healthy mind can A, not be so negatively affected by people not doing the things that you expect of them or that are, you know, your contract or whatever the things that, you know, you can reasonably expect of a relationship, right?
Yes.
This is where we learn healthy boundaries. This is why people don't have, they go, how can I love this person and have boundaries? I go, loving someone and having healthy boundaries are not mutually exclusive either. But unless you really understand that, you keep giving people all of this rope in which to hurt you because they don't know and you don't know and you just keep this cycle going and going. And so for me, it was after getting to 37 years of age. Literally, I rung in 37 and 2 days later or 3 days later, I was on a plane for Connecticut. 3 years ago to go to life-changing and ultimately life-saving therapy.
Wow.
Yeah. But it took me that long to figure it out. And I had to hit bottom in order for it to happen.
How long did it take you, because you talk about it, which again is something I admire so much about you, which is what I try to do. And it took me a long time too to be like, am I going to talk about this? When is it okay to talk about this? Like,
now.
You know, without...
Well, now, and how, now, right. And now, and
because you think
now.
Like, will it fuck with my career? Like, will people think this? You know, will is this? And then you start to realize, you go, the people I've admired my whole life have been bound by nothing. They say exactly what's going on. Yeah. They're true to themselves. They're transparent.
They're vulnerable.
Bad, good, indifferent. Like, they're just trying.
Yeah.
And but you, again, when you're in a specific career, which ours is a bit of a weird one.
Oh, yeah.
You have to kind of look at every step you take, or they tell you you're supposed.
Yeah, for the perception of it all, for sure.
Correct. And then so you sit here, and when I saw you start talking about it, I was like, fuck yes. Okay, good. This is good. People need this. They need people that they trust. They need people that there's so many people who are sitting there going, I feel so awkward. I feel so weak. I feel so that I'm not, why is this person doing this? And this person doesn't seem to have any problems. And you go, comparison. It's just not true.
Yeah. And comparison is the thief of joy. And that is true, 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 true. And Instagram and Twitter and all of the things, Facebook, they are nothing but comparison games. That's what we've been saddled with, you know. Not nothing but. There's actually good stuff that can come from them. And I really do believe in this year of 2020, in this year of perfect fucking vision, that we're all going to see some real shit go down. I really believe that's going to happen. I think that this pandemic, it might sound odd, but I think not that there's not going to be pain and sadness as there already is right now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a little bit of sadness and pain for everybody, and a lot of pain and sadness for some people very specifically. Mm-hmm. And my prayers continue to go out to all of those people and all of us collectively. But I still believe deep down in my heart that this will end up being more of a gift than a curse at the end of the day, this whole thing that we're going through, because it's shaking up a lot of industries and a lot of core beliefs in a lot of us, and making us look at things, reflect on things, and really go like, what have we been doing all of this time? Why aren't we going and addressing the fact that we don't love ourselves? How many people are stuck in a quarantine right now, but by themselves, who wouldn't even have known that they don't love themselves?
Apartment in the Bronx, who are like literally alone and going, I don't know who this person is.
Exactly. And that is necessary. We have been distracted. There are so many great ways to distract ourselves with our phone, with our games, with our Netflix, with whatever, right? Kids, I mean, our jobs, there are everything. All the sports. Look at all the things that have been taken from us.
You can distract yourself 27 hours a day, all day,
every single day. And right now, that, oddly, I think is going to be a gift more than a curse. I think that will be something that a lot of people need to happen in their lives for them to address some things that they weren't addressing because they were very good at skirting it. I was very good at skirting it for 37 years. I had to go make some moves in my life that felt very confident. And I feel very confident about now again, but after I made them, like coming out to Texas and wanting to build this movie studio and all that stuff. Well, thank you. But in the moment, I thought I had blown up my life. I thought that I had broken up with my girlfriend who was from Austin. Came out here by myself, was living in an Airstream in the middle of nowhere, and didn't feel like I had a lot of support necessarily. And like, not that people didn't believe in me or love me, but they're like, okay, have fun, you know, doing your crazy idea in Texas. We're going to be here in LA. And I came out and I was like, oh my God, I think I've completely screwed it all up, basically, right? So I needed to hit that. Thank God it didn't take a pandemic to finally slap me across the face to go and seek the healing that I needed to seek. But a lot of other people, we needed this to be that shakeup. Or for kids who hated going to school, now can't wait to go back to school. Or for people who hated going to their job, who can't wait to go back to work. Or or teachers that didn't feel appreciated by parents who are now having to teach their own kids. You know, there's a lot of things that we've taken for granted. Even our own worth as people, our legitimate inherent worth, that you don't need to have any particular brand of shoe on your foot or bag around your back or slung in your arm or whatever the tag says on your shirt. None of that has anything to do with your value, intrinsic value as a human being, as a life form on this miracle of a fucking planet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what we need to get back to. And I think this thing is going to help people get back to that a little
bit. Yeah, and it's funny, you know, as and I've said this before, you know, in the few shows that we've done before this, it's like I have most, because we launched, you know, during Corona, during this whole COVID situation, and most of my family's in New York. We've lost a few people. Some people have had tracheotomies. Some people still in the ICU. Yeah. Some, you know, another friend who's just still in the vent. And there's like, you know, my brother-in-law is a firefighter. All this stuff that's going down, right? And at the same time, what I continually hear from friends who are essential workers and all that is like the ones who get to spend time with their kids, the ones who would go, wait, I didn't realize how many things I was buying or doing that I don't need that didn't make me happy.
Just pass the time.
Right. You know, like now they're doing puzzles with their families or they're sitting in or they're reading or they're again, getting to know themselves. Yeah. And what we continue to push is like, you are the answer to all your questions. Right. Ultimately, once you turn it in.
Yeah.
And what's so beautiful about that is you also build up if you're okay with you, you can't guarantee that other people are going to be good people. they might be fucking awful. They might be on their own journey.
Yeah.
And they might have to come into your life business-wise.
Yeah.
Some might be family members. Could be a spouse. Could be anybody, right? But you become more untouchable when you're you, when you're in touch with you, because you lessen the blow.
Yeah. Well, this is why, like, all of those people you were talking about before, the actors or people that you looked up to that were vulnerable and all that jazz, it's just because they did work in their life. They did work to heal.
That's right.
So that even if – so you feel very confident. I believe vulnerability is a fucking superpower. I think it's one of the most incredible things because we're so afraid of it. And then once we share some vulnerable moment about ourselves, it's insane how many people go, oh my God, me too.
Yeah.
Me too, me too, me too. Oh my God, I can't. And the bigger the platform you have to share that, the more inclusive it becomes of a lot of other people, right? So ultimately though, the only thing that's holding us back from being vulnerable is the fear of judgment of those who might not understand or who might take it as an opportunity to judge us. But if you've done the work on the healing, then it doesn't matter what somebody else says.
That's right.
It doesn't matter. You can say whatever you need to say, so long as you are hopefully saying something that's truth in love. And you're being honest about your journey, what you struggle with, whatever that is, and you're not trying to be heavy-handed, and you're not trying to shove it down. There's no agenda other than just being vulnerable. Well, guess what? Not only does it not matter what anybody else says, but it doesn't faze you at all, because you know that if you've done the work, you know that anyone who's still kicking and screaming just hasn't done the work yet.
Yeah, and also being honest that we make mistakes. We're human. Like, this is all, like, the fact of that you're not going to be perfect. Yeah. There is no, it's okay. You have to give yourself some grace.
Yeah.
You have to be okay.
And patience and all of it. Right? Yeah.
You just got to give it to yourself. You got to, like, say, it's okay. I think that one of the things that I've always been really interested in is, how do you chase to know? Everybody says, I'm not where I want to be, or I don't have what I want. But most of those people don't even know what that is. What do you really want in this life? There's the big question, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think,
and it might change.
I think that's one of the big questions. I think that still the big question is, what is the purpose, or what is life? That's the thing that we've all, since day one, and I don't know what day one is. I don't know what day one of enlightened, Homo erectus, or you know what I mean, like, whenever we moved from great ape into whatever the hell we moved into, whatever that is, I don't know when that moment of enlightenment, by the way, it might have happened even while we still were apes. Some apes might be very enlightened in small ways, but we just can't track that or understand it in some ways. But anyway, not to go on a whole evolution,
no, I love that.
You know, but I think that in whatever that moment of enlightenment was, where we became aware of ourselves, where we all of a sudden could ask the question, why? That's what separates us from essentially what we believe to be all other creatures. We ask why, which is why we made clothes, which is why we made tools, which is why we did all the things. Mm-hmm. Other animals are sitting around going, why are we working so hard to get food when we can just grow it, or we can set a trap, or we can build an instrument like a gun or a bow and arrow to hunt it instead of having to run it down every time? The only reason we did any of that shit is because we sat around and go, why are we doing it this way?
Right.
It had to have been why first. And that initial why was, why am I here? Why am I asking why? What is, you know, what's going on? So that's still to me the biggest question. But then the what is my purpose? What do I want in this life? That is a close second. It's right there, because you're almost answering, it's almost kind of together, really.
Sure.
Because a lot of us find our purpose, or we think that the why is the purpose, but I don't know that it is. I think the why is merely to be. I think the why is because. In the same way that, like, in the Old Testament, God says, I am. Like, that was when Moses said, what's your name? And he goes, I am.
I am.
I am. Which I think is one of the most profound things in any manuscript, whether you're a Jew or a Christian or Muslim or whatever. I think it's one of the most accurate descriptions of what the name of a God, celestial, all-encompassing entity would be. Because there is no name. They're just saying, I am everywhere, in all things, through you, through those plants, through the gnats that are coming out of these plants, from the snakes and the coyotes that are running around on this property every once in a while. I am. And that is everything and all encompassing, right? I mean, that is massive. But we are still trying to figure out, like, well, what am I? If you are, what am I? And we find that our the meaning of life must be connected to what I accomplish in life. And I think most enlightened people would tell you that that's just not true.
That's the false bill of goods we talked about.
Yeah.
That's what we're sold. And I think, you know, recently I was saying, you know, with the whole, I use money as an example, right? When I was young, I was told, just make money.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, okay. And they go, just make money. Like, you need money, make money.
Yeah.
They never said, like, when you make money, do this with money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was just make money. Yeah. So then you make money and you go, oh, okay, now what?
Yeah.
But we didn't, you know, if you don't come from these generations of people who know the game of money, you would go, well, okay, well, I made money, now what? Yeah. Because it didn't really, it changed a few things.
Yeah.
But I still feel a certain way. And I think that that's why, and especially with your life, and I know what my life is, I look at things like almost like chapters of a book where I look back at certain parts of my life and I go, that was interesting. I was a totally different person. I was like that. I wouldn't even recognize that human being if he came in.
Yeah.
And I think that that is the stages of it. I think if you don't have a lot of chapters, you might want to reassess, right? Because life is perpetual growth. We have to grow towards things every day.
Yeah.
For you, what besides being out there, you're on this large platform. You're literally a superhero, right? You're playing a superhero, which is incredible.
Baby.
It's amazing, right? To do that, you also now have this platform where you can tell people all these different things of your experience. And you're always prefacing it with saying, this is my experience. This is what I'm not saying this is you.
Yeah.
I'm saying for me. To me, that voice is so incredibly important. And what I'm trying to do with this and a lot, you know, not just because it's Mental Health Awareness Month, is take away that fear from people, that fear of feeling different and out of place. I get messages every single day from people who listen to stuff and go, I was made fun of, or my own family abused me because of this and told me I was weak and told me to move out and told me this because I had really bad anxiety, or I had, you know, I felt inept in certain ways and I didn't feel motivated in this way. I think that that is an incredible, not just the stigma, it's something that the people who you think are going to be the closest to you sometimes don't even get.
Yeah.
So how, you know, for you, you've had such a relationship with your fans. You still do, right? With people, they're almost like family. I hate the word fans. It's like,
no, I get it. I mean, look, I understand why you don't like the word fans, because there's got to be a better term for it.
They haven't created one yet.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I came from theater, man. I came from school and community theater, and I think when I was around 4, I was old enough to be cognizant of the fact that I could intentionally make someone laugh. I had accidentally made people laugh up to that point, I'm sure. But you know, you look at like your kids when they accidentally, and you laugh and they go, what? They don't know why. And then they start laughing with you, and they might try to recreate it, which is funny for a hot second, and then it starts getting really old.
Yeah.
But to know that you could intentionally make someone laugh, and I knew even at 4, you can tell a laughing person is a happy person. They feel good inside. I could make them feel that way. That made me feel good inside. So I was hooked. That was the drug of the rest of my life. I wanted to make people happy through entertaining them. I didn't figure out until a little bit later than that, and not too long after that, oh, that's acting, that's entertaining. Oh, and there's a job that you can do with this, you know? And you can do it for a career one day. And I found theater, and thank God, because I was such a spaz of a kid and I needed the outlet to go and be the spaz and entertain people more. And I found more of a structured way to do that in theater. But always, 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 I've maintained the philosophy that if you're an artist, you are only as good as your fans. You are only as good as your audience. You are only as good as the people that you have served with your entertainment, with your art, who have agreed that, you know what, I like what you do. The arts gets this really weird subjective grace that other vocations just don't get. If I hired somebody to do my drywall and it was all kind of like all over the place, you know what I mean? I'd be like, no, thank you. I'm not hiring you again.
I need it this way.
Exactly. But if an artist is like, here's my thing, it's an expression and I don't know what, you know, but people are like, okay,
I like it.
All right. Right. Patrons of the arts is what I would like to call fame.
Right.
It's either, you know, it's like once upon a time we used to have quite literally patrons of the arts. They were very wealthy people that would put artists up in there, like a wing of their mansion, and they would pay for, you know, whether it was Picasso or whatever. And it's like, oh, we got to have Picasso here. And we're going to keep him going and feeding him. And the wealthy would do that. Well, now we live in a microtransactional world. We don't need the super wealthy to be the patrons of the arts. We just need a lots of folks at smaller amounts to pay for tickets for a movie or watch a show that we do or listen to this podcast and support the people that are sponsors. You know what I mean? Right. But still, it's the same essence. You are supporting an artist. You are a patron of the arts, which is why things like Patreon and all that, term. But for the short catch-all, you know, fans. And so I just think it's important to always to foster that relationship and to tell them, thank you. I would walk out in the foyer of my community theater shows. You would shake everyone's fucking hand. Everyone of the 150 people that came to the Ojai Arts Center. Hi, thank you so much for coming. And you know what, by the way, you get a lot of interesting feedback that way. You learn a lot as an actor. You can look people in the eye and they tell you what they think of your performance sometimes, you know?
I've always found it interesting, the actors and the artists and even the athletes and all my friends that I know that the people who are really good with it, and then there's people who are really bad with it. Some people are awful with it because they're just awful people, and some people are bad with it because they're kind of weird and awkward.
And it's tough.
It's not a bad...
By the way, just a lot of fans are awkward and weird and stuff.
Correct.
You know, that, yeah.
It is definitely a skill. It's kind of a secondary skill to this, like the way people are making them feel comfortable, them being comfortable. There is a secondary skill to that. Some people are terrible at it.
Yeah.
I don't want to knock them for it because sometimes my first intention was like, man, this motherfucker is an asshole to people. Like, you can't do that to your fans. They're here for you. Yeah. But then you realize that they're just kind of self-conscious and weird.
Oh, yeah. I always tell fans when they come up to me and they're like, because typically, like, I love my fans. I go to conventions all the time.
We both do.
I think it's a personality thing, like you're saying. But when they come to me, they go, thank you for being so nice. Like, you know, I went to so-and-so and I go, hey, just know that's not personal. They're on their journey. And some people, they get thrown into being famous and they don't know what comes with that. They haven't put a lot of thought into it. And they might be super introverted. They might get drained by like five people in line. It's like, crap, I don't know how to keep going through this. Or they haven't made peace enough with their own career to see the value in the fact that they really, I think, when we're at conventions, people are lining up to pay you to love on them. That's really ultimately what it is.
It's such a great way to look at it.
And then what a great job it is if you can look at it that way.
Yeah, and I think also what you just said is so important too, is that you can train to be an actor, you can train to be an athlete, you can train to be a singer. You can't train to be famous. It is a very strange
occurrence. Can, but you'd have to be... That would have to be a really ballsy move for someone like be like, all right, young Timmy, you're going to be famous one day.
Right.
We're putting you through elocution? I don't know. Whatever.
Elocution, I think, is the word. Yeah. But it would just be odd. It's just an odd thing that a lot of people, like you said, that there's no... Some people don't realize that that's part that comes with being good at your job. It's something that comes with it.
Yeah.
But what I've always been interested in, because I don't... to be completely honest, which is so weird, I probably have, in 20 years of doing this, I probably talked to, actor-wise, two people that I'm actually friends with. More with like directors and writers. Those are more my friends. And the only reason being is because I've always felt that actors have a bit of a tough thing. And this is even odd for me to say, that you're in a position where you're being judged all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That takes your mental in a completely different way, right? You have to really learn how to navigate what you're reading, what you're responding to, and that it doesn't affect your mental in too much. Sure. Because if you do, you can go down a rabbit hole every single day.
Oh, yeah.
And it could take you into deep, dark places. It could bring you up.
Yeah.
It could bring you down. But yet it is a symptom, and I don't mean that in a bad way, of what we do. There is reviews. There is... people talking about it. There's money that a movie makes. Oh, yeah. There's all this stuff that comes that you rely so much of your self-worth into.
Yeah.
How have you navigated that journey in the 20 somewhat years of that?
I mean, as best I could, poorly in a lot of respects, up to being, 3 years ago when I went to the therapy that I went to. And I had gone to a little therapy before that when I went through my divorce, and I learned a bit through that. And, but I don't know, man, I think, as far as like a lot of the things that they don't tell you about, or you don't learn, being famous or whatever, like, I don't know. I never knew what it was like, what it was going to be like to be famous, but I at least put some fucking thought into it. I used to sit there. To be honest, I was always a little like, even though I know everybody's on their own journey, but I don't, I was always frustrated with actors, or really just anyone who got into a famous vocation that became famous and then was so irked by people wanting their autograph.
I was always like, it's weird.
Because nobody needs to tell you that, bro. Like, part of the reason why you wanted that was because you saw all those other rock stars or all those other movie stars doing that.
Yeah.
And now you're just pissed off that that's the deal. That's like somebody wanting to, not that anybody's, or maybe there are people, I don't know, but like super dreaming about being a plumber. But, you know, that's like being like, oh my God, I can't wait to be a plumber. And then going on your first day of the job, and you get some shit on your hands and be like, oh man, I didn't know I was getting into this.
This is crazy.
It's like, what are you talking about? You are a fucking plumber.
You wanted to be a plumber.
Exactly. So anybody who was getting into, you know, in the beginning of Hollywood, I can understand a lot of people not understanding what comes with that. At this point in human history, there's enough track record of this kind of comes with the job.
That's right.
There's enough broken souls that we can look at, but nobody wants to think that they're that person. That's where people kind of get into it. And I was always with wide eyes going, that could be me. If I want to do this shit and I really love doing this, that could be me. And I better get my head around what a good attitude on that will be. You know what I mean? So that, I think, just that prep of my own mind and believing in myself and believing that I very well could make it here to one, you know, someday.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know. I mean, speaking to that and also going back to something that you were saying earlier about the money of it all, right? Mm-hmm. Like how we're taught, just go make money. Just go make money. Well, it's the same thing. I mean, actors are driven in the same ways in some respects, artists or whatever. I mean, the purest of artists would say, it's not about the money. I don't care about the money. I just want to make art. Just want to make art, drink wine and cheese and make art. Okay. But all of us, even as young children, are told that this is the way the world works. Mommy and daddy have to go, or mommy or daddy or whatever, have to go and work. They have to go to work. We learn about work very early on. We learn about the concept of work as soon as we're learning about mommy and daddy's names, because we know mommy and daddy go to a place that is not home, right? So we're very early on conditioned to believe that work is essential for survival, because work gives you this thing called money, which is essential for survival, because in order to get all of the things like food and shelter and clothing and water and whatever that actually are essential for survival, you need this one thing. So the reason, part of the reason why I think we're all so fucked up right now with anxiety and stress and depression and everything, and why monks have known some shit for a long time, or anyone who has been tapping into their parasympathetic nervous system, they understand that if you don't turn off your fight, flight, or freeze regularly, you start losing your mind. And when we took, I believe, based on various things I've read or things I've heard or whatever, including books like Sapiens, I don't know if you've read Sapiens, one of my favorites, but essentially in the agricultural revolution or whenever the hell, 10,000 years ago, and we started using these shells as currency, well, all of a sudden it wasn't that steak is worth something or this pot is worth something and we can barter that. It's all of a sudden, well, you just need enough shells. I don't need to barter you for anything other than with these shells. And then, oh, by the way, as we started building monetary kind of currencies and things, then banks and things started coming around. And then all that started getting screwed with even more. But at the end of the day, what we've done is we've completely reprogrammed our brains, I believe, as human beings, to be going nonstop in fight, flight, or freeze, not even knowing. It's like we're in a constant subtle state of it. It's not what it used to be, which was like, lion, shit, run, adrenaline going. You can run miles and be starving and you could still get away from it. It's not that kind of a thing. It's even more sinister because it is a constant low-level sympathetic nervous system, fight, flight, or freeze, which you're only supposed to be in when you're in survival mode. We are in constant survival mode.
Most people don't even know.
And they don't even know it. And so to that extent, to the extent that any of our narratives, whatever we believed would be the best way for us to then survive our lives, that our ego is very much helping us in. So whatever you looked at life as and how you looked at your career, what that would be, I happen to look at it like, hey, the best way for me to navigate my career, whether I liked it or not, is, although I'm an affable person and outgoing and a 7 on the Enneagram, if you know anything about that. And so totally about people and all that shit. But even if I wasn't about people, I still wrap my head around the fact like, hey, if I want to have a good career, you need to be good to your people. You need to be good to that audience. You know what I mean? That was all built into my survival. So fortunately, I understood that enough where my ego and survival instincts weren't thwarting it. Other people, they think I need to protect myself. I can't have these people around me. They're going to take from me. They're going to whatever that is. So they start throwing up these walls and they don't want to have anything to do with their audience, or they don't want to have anything to do with the fans or the whatever.
Yeah. And I also think a lot of it is passed down from the studio system, which was a lot of artists and actors. And again, the studio system, the way it was set up in Hollywood was you went out and did your movie, but they didn't know you personally. And then we got into really when you hit the 70s, the escaping into characters, you know, the Meisner and the, you know, and being like, you know, the Strasberg technique of like, you become your character and don't ever let them know you.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how a lot of us came up with. It was like, you weren't a brand. If you were, you were looked at different. You were either an actor and you hid.
Yeah.
And the only time they ever met you was like on Dick Cavett or Johnny Carson, you know, and you they go, oh, I didn't even know he had an accent. I didn't know he was from Michigan. Yeah, it was like that kind of stuff. But you never knew anything about it. And then all of a sudden, as the world grew, we started knowing more about people.
Oh, yeah.
People started being revealed.
Yeah, yeah.
And all of a sudden, they were like, wait a second. Oh, yeah. That's not who I thought that person was. They were a really good actor, but they are a horrible person.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, they go, that person's a really good person. The one thing that I love, Alfre Woodard and I used to talk about all the time, she said this, and it was the greatest line I ever heard. Fame is really interesting. If you're a dick, you're going to become a giant dick. If you're a really good person, you're going to become a really great person. Like it enhances whatever innately is in you.
100%. Yeah. It's definitely an enhancement for
sure. It's an enhancement of what your core is inside of you.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you don't hit these weird roads along the way and these little bumps that maybe you got to navigate, but there is that thing with it. And I think that what we're in now, we're in this strange universe of everybody's out there kind of with social media, like putting and trying to get attention.
Yeah. And control their own narrative.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And control their own narrative. I think because everyone has so much access and there's so much information out there that it's only wise if you do have some kind of a platform to ensure that people are seeing the right platform and not what a lot of other people might be saying about you or whatever. Right. In most respects, that's not the most necessary thing. That's mostly necessary for people that are constantly being talked about. If you're not really being talked about all that much, or slandered or whatever, you don't need to control that narrative as much. But it's still an opportunity to be authentic. But going back to your point, a lot of people over the last, you know, whenever 70s, 60s, 70s, you know, either branding or not, there's always been this thing, I think, in Hollywood of like, be a mystery. Mm-hmm. Don't let them see all of you. So they want more, right?
They believe you.
Yeah. Right. And that's been a big play for a lot of people. In fact, I remember when I started in Less Than Perfect, I was working with somebody and I was going on the IMDb message boards when IMDb was still like super low.
Those message boards. Yeah. Those are great.
And because I was working on Less Than Perfect and, nobody. And I was like, what is this IMDb thing? And then all of a sudden I found it. And then there were people asking questions about the show and nobody was answering the questions because nobody from production knew about it. And I was like, well, okay, I'm on the show. So I started answering questions like online on IMDb, on the message boards. And
it's so great.
And I remember this person was like, why are you doing that? Like, don't you want to be a little bit more of a mystery? You know, because to them, survival, being successful, which is surviving, right? That meant being a mystery. And I was like, no, they said something along the lines of, you know, it's better to be a mystery. It's better to be a question mark. And I said, I would rather be an exclamation point. I don't think it's going to behoove me or anyone else in a digital age when everything is going to be known, by the way. Mm-hmm. If you want to keep playing this 1940s, what's going on behind closed doors? Like, what the fuck? What are you talking about?
Right.
All of your shit's going to be online.
That's right.
So you can either choose to be a decent human being and make as good a decisions as you can. And when you mess up, you apologize and say, man, you know what? I was unaware or whatever. Or hold your ground. If you're like, listen, I didn't mess up. I know that everyone's trying to lynch me on social media, but I'm going to stand my ground on this. I'm not going to give in, right? Whatever it is, you got to be involved in the conversation now. Well, you don't have to. You can be a passenger, but I don't advise it. I certainly don't advise it. And I think that going and living as an exclamation point, which then, by the way, ironically, I ended up becoming Shazam, and Shazam in the title is an exclamation point in it, which I was like, what is this? Come on, God. You're too cool.
We're in the Matrix.
You're too cool. It's
the Truman Show. I love it.
So, but I think that it's important. I think that it's important to not try and pull off this question mark anymore. It doesn't behoove you, but as we started this conversation, it doesn't behoove anyone else if we're not being able to be vulnerable. It's not helping us to not be a vulnerable person,
and it's not helping
anybody else, because we have, if you are a celebrity, you have a fucking platform. Use it for good. If we all used our platforms for altruistic means, the world would be amazing. It would be amazing if every single industry gave like 10% on every dollar made to making the world a better place. We would redistribute all the wealth right now. And we could honestly go make everyone's lives different and better.
And that's the thing with that comparison society that we live in today. It's like that honesty of just people are literally, we're entering this age of authenticity and we're longing for the honesty. What's real? And the thing is as we start to see, and that's why like you said, if everybody was just like, hey, I know I'm doing all these videos with these Lamborghinis or whatever. Like, you know, somebody in hip hop is like, I know that's cool. I'm just doing that. This is the real deal. This is what's going on. You'd be like, wait a second.
I'd rather they not make the videos with the Lamborghinis.
Exactly. But it's like, it might be the first step in the right direction. It's like somebody there's got to
those rappers think that that's survival. I mean, again, it's the same thing.
I grew up in the culture of the more you showed, the more it was, the Cadillac, the gold, the money, that was a symbol of look at me.
Yeah, which is survival.
Which is survival.
Yeah.
And that goes into the fight, flight, or freeze thing that you're saying, is that we don't even realize we're in these weird survival techniques every day. And like you said, I think just the sharing. And the main point of this whole thing, and for me wanting to talk to you, is that open and honesty of people that could learn so much. You're at the incredible top of your game. You're in an amazing place.
I hope I'm not at the top.
No, but you are. You have a ways to go. Right. Of course, we all do on growth, but you're in such an amazing place, and how you are to people, how you've always been, is so important. And I'm telling you that from someone on the outside, someone that's known you from the beginning, someone that's always watched from afar, doing that is, it's not just impressive, it's necessary. And that is extremely important for people to see, because we're in this comparison position. We're in this thing that no matter what, we feel less than all the time. No matter what it is, somebody who doesn't have kids see somebody with kids, somebody who doesn't have 100, 200 million to see somebody with that. And it's always something, it's something, it's something. And at the end of the day, it's just us in the mirror. And we got to be okay with that.
Do you love yourself?
Do you love yourself?
At all, I think it all boils down to that. And unfortunately, most of us are never taught to love ourselves. That is because our parents didn't know that was important.
Right.
And their parents didn't know it was important. And their parents before them, and so on and so forth. The sins of the father. This has been passed on for so long because we've lived in a broken world that did not understand what trauma even was. And that doing the various things to shape and guide and protect and provide whatever for your family, there was a lot of bad instruction and bad programming in all of that stuff, you know, scaring your children into threatening them, shaming them into doing certain things because you genuinely loved them, but you got shamed into not doing bad things.
It's so also out of fear. A lot of it's out of fear. Oh, man, I find myself like, you know, it's like when we go for walks with the boys, it's like you get scared. They run off and you get scared that a car is going to hit. So you yell and you go, well, no, stop.
Yeah.
You know, and you've gotten mad. And you're like, do you see what you did? You could have got hit by a car. And you realize that your fear has now manifested into them.
Yep.
All they heard was the noise, the level.
Yep, yep.
And you're trying to explain to them, no, you don't understand. Instead of just calmly coming in and going, okay, let me explain to you what happens here.
Yeah.
And maybe they would have responded more to that. And yes, I agree that I think that, and I don't want to say this for all parents because I'm sure there were outliers, that back in the day, people were not equipped. And the trauma that was caused, now we have so many resources at our hands that we need to dive into. Because in this, we got this life's 1 second. It's going to be over in a blink.
Oh, bro. Yeah.
In a blink.
Yeah.
We're going to blink. It's over.
Yeah. And everyone will be forgotten. emperors of entire dynasties that lasted thousands of years. Can you name all of them? Because I can't.
No.
They're a footnote in a textbook, and they'll only be there for a little while.
I think I can name like two Roman emperors.
Yeah.
And that's the Roman
And you confuse the two of them.
Yeah, yeah. I confuse them. Caracalla and literally, you know, and obviously Caesar. It's like
yeah.
two.
Yeah.
How many can you name right off the bat right now?
Caesar.
and
Caligula, was he one? I don't know.
I don't think he was an emperor.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. They're all dead.
They're all dead.
And we'll all be dead.
But that's the point,
yeah.
right? So it's over in a second. And it's like, while we're here, we got to find what it is, right? And we got to not be scared of what it is. And we got to lean into it, getting to know ourselves, doing that work to go to these other places. I think the one thing I would love, you know, like I said, we've known 20 years. In that 20-year span, the versions of yourself have changed.
Yeah.
Your story has been so different so many times.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people get scared that the story they're in right now is going to be the story of their life. And that's not necessarily true.
No, no. If I can share any kind of hope to that, it's that no, you know, it's actually, there's a lot of hope in it. First of all, while we do mature and grow and are different versions of ourselves throughout our lives, as we've talked about, we're also inherently the exact same person. Mm-hmm. No matter how much trauma or how much healing you go through, there is a core Theo. There is a core Zach. There's a core of anyone out there that's listening to this right now. There's a core you. Don't be afraid that will be taken from you, whether through more abuse in your life or by going and getting healing of that abuse in your life. I was afraid that somehow I was going to go to therapy and I wasn't going to be me anymore. I wasn't going to, because all of the reasons why I was me came from a lot of my trauma. So how could I possibly still be me? How could I still want to do the things that I wanted to do and all the things I was passionate about? And not only am I still very, very much still passionate about all of those things, I'm in some ways even more passionate about them because I'm also more focused on them, because I can be more focused because I'm more healed in my heart and not torn in my heart and my mind about things that I have yet to reconcile. So I think that not only is there a better life that waits for all of us on the other side of doing the work, and the work is therapy and self-love. That's what it is. If there's any point to this life, it is to love. As the Beatles sang, all you need is love, which I used to think was such a trite lyric. I was like, I love it. It sounds great, but like, come on, you need a lot more than love. But if you are acting as a conduit of light and life and love, if that is your only purpose in this world, then you are doing your job. You are doing it for you and you are doing it for everybody else. And you can only do that efficiently or at the highest level if you've done it for yourself first. Just like when you go to a plane, when you go flying on a plane, which nobody's done in a little while now, but when you do go fly on a plane again and the stewardesses bring you through the whole deal and they're like, oxygen masks will be deployed, put on yours first before helping anybody else. That is self-love. You got to love yourself first. And people go, oh, how do I do that? I feel like I'll be selfish. And no. There's a difference between being a narcissist and loving yourself.
So true.
You got to adequately, not undervalue yourself, not overvalue yourself, but adequately value yourself, your life, your time, your energy, the blessing and miracle that you are on this planet. And you are able to set healthy boundaries through all those things. You have got to go to therapy. I tell everybody, if you haven't been to therapy, go to therapy. And if you have gone to therapy, go to more therapy. Yeah. And I say that to myself.
Do it online
now. Yeah, I say it to myself and I say it to everybody else because we need to understand that it's a good thing. But B, part of why it's a great thing is because we don't realize just how important a third party, doesn't have a dog in the hunt. They are sitting there hearing what you're telling them. They don't have, you know, your mom or your dad or your siblings or your wife, anybody. You might love the hell out of those people. They might love the hell out of you. But there's still the thing in the back of your mind going, are they trying to get what they want?
Agenda.
Exactly. And if you find the right therapist, there's no agenda. They're just trying to, their only agenda is, how do I help you be a healthier version of you? That's it. So that's how my hope that I can offer people as somebody who's gone through extreme darkness and extreme depression, suicidal even to some points. I went and changed my life and saved my life, and I never changed who I was. I became a better, stronger, healthier version of who I was and more equipped now to love more, because that's the fucking point. Go use what you have to be a conduit of love and light and life, and know that when you are finally extinguished, when your bit of energy, your battery, you know, is done here and needs to go and be with the rest of the great energy that is I am, that you've done your part in that. You've in this Thanos snap of the fingers of what our lifespan is, because we are infinitely small specks of sand in an infinitely large mosaic of infinitely small specks of sand. That's what we are. And if you can grasp that, you can let go. Your ego can let go of it. Your pride, your hubris, your fears, you can let go of all that stuff and go, oh, it's not about me. Shocker. It's not about me. The world's not about me, but my world is.
I'm about me.
I will love me. I will love me. And if I ever want to love somebody else or be loved healthily by somebody else, I need to love me first.
You got
to
put the mask on.
You got to love
If you put
yourself,
your mask you on, put, you yes. literally can help everybody on the planet.
Yes, yes.
It's too real, because it's just amazing.
Because it's real, baby.
I appreciate you, bro.
I appreciate you, man. Yeah, I'm so glad we got to make this happen.
Me too.
Let's go for a motorcycle ride whenever you get back on a motorcycle.
If it's charged.
Yeah.
If the bike is charged.
Exactly. Awesome.
Amazing. Well, there it is. Chaos and all. What an incredible conversation. And going in. Going deep on stuff. Which is the only way to do it. Especially when you're talking about this stuff, especially during Mental Health Awareness Month. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. He's truly, truly such a unique, incredible person. And I'm just such a big fan of what he's doing in all facets of life. We are rolling here on Theory, and it's been amazing. It's incredible to know that we've only been doing this, you know, for a little while. So, you know the deal, right? The hashtag is TheoryPod. And you got to go subscribe. You got to go to Apple Podcast. You got to write some reviews. You got to go to Spotify. You got to go everywhere that it's available. And we got some pretty cool stuff coming up. And obviously the audience participation part of this, which if you don't know, go find out. It's coming up. So go subscribe. Be a part of it. Let's all get into Theory, and let's keep it going. Let's keep doing this. All right? I appreciate you. Be easy on yourself.